This is episode 22 of the podcast without a name. Who write a jingle for it?
We should have someone write a jingle for us. I wonder if we could find someone on Facebook to do that for free.
For the best in the whole world. I forget the name of the company, though. God damn it. Must not be a good jingle. This is episode 22 of the podcast without a name.
Episode 22 of the podcast without a name. Rich and Joe, without Anthony.
You're still nameless.
Still nameless, yes. I think we'll be nameless for a little while. I don't know.
But we'll see. Making moves to become famous.
One day. Somehow, some way. Anthony is sick this time, which is code for he's probably drinking a margarita somewhere. Making fun of us. With GIFs.
You know him.
Or GIFs, yeah. Whatever one you want to use.
Pronounced yogging.
Yeah, he's yogging with the soft J. Anyway, episode 22. Rich and Joe, like we just said, once again. So this is, I guess, another episode of the Rich and Joe Show. That's our theme song, right?
I think it's been, yeah. Man.
Anyway, it's not going to get too crazy. Our last podcast, although the podcast itself was pretty good, our last live stream went a little off the rails, which was really fun. We may have lost the like from it or two, but who knows? It's been a lot. I mean, it's been like, what, 3 weeks?
It's been a while, yeah. A lot of stuff has happened.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole Harvey Weinstein situation just blew up into a moral panic. We'll talk about that. And we'll probably start off with the Texas shooting, which was about, is it a week ago now? There was the Texas shooting, I guess, or 2 weeks? Jeez. God, I'm losing track of time. But 26 people killed by some crazy dude named Devin Patrick Kelly. And the motive seems to be unfounded and more so probably to do with mental illness than anything else. But there's some things that obviously it's politicized, like the Las Vegas shooting. Everything's politicized nowadays. Nothing shall go untouched by the political sphere in our country. So we'll touch on that a little bit. And if we have some time, we'll probably just jump into something random that we usually do. Anyway, so Rich, how are you, by the way? What are you drinking?
Budweiser, because I'm an American.
Because it's the king of beers, right? Or am I in the wrong beer? Is that a different beer?
No, it is. It is the king of beers.
I'm drinking what Anthony would probably be proud of me for, 8-point IPA, which is from Devil's Backbone Brewing Company. I wonder where this is. Let's see if there's a location. Virginia. My wife's stomping ground. But that's good.
I don't believe Budweiser can claim to be the only king of beers, right? Doesn't a Warsteiner, aren't they a Die Königin unter der Bieren or something like that?
Oh my God, you're speaking Nazi. I don't speak Nazi. Nein!
And I said that with a horrible American accent, not a German.
Well, there is, the funny thing about Budweiser is there is a Czech beer called Budweiser, and they were the original Budweiser, and there was a legal battle between the two of them back in the day, and they came to a settlement, and Budweiser was allowed to sell in certain areas, and that Budweiser still exists in the Czech Republic and parts of Europe. It's much better than the Budweiser we have. I had it in Prague, actually. It's pretty good. It's actually not too bad. I miss tasting random beers in random countries when I was in Europe. That's the one thing the world does well. I mean, we do it well too, obviously, but beer. Like, if we need to find common ground, beer is our common ground.
It is the brew that binds us.
It is true. All right, so Texas. 26 people killed in a church, Christian church. And, you know, everyone is freaking out about it. I mean, rightfully so. 26 people in a mass shooting. The story is pretty compelling. There was some good people with guns that tried to, fight back and stuff like that. There was a chase. It's a horrible situation. Sad story. There was a lot of young kids shot too. It's just all around bad. But the thing that's really annoying, and the thing I want to kind of touch on that bothers me, is this false dichotomy between a terrorist and being mentally ill. We've talked about this a little bit, but I think maybe this is a good time to kind of jump into it, because you hear a lot of people on Twitter, you hear a lot of people on social media and on the mainstream networks like CNN, they always point out this like stupid thing of, oh, if they're dark, they're terrorists. If they're white, they're mentally ill, which is just false. It's just false. And people tend to forget that there is actually a like definition for these things. But I had this like really long drawn out post I was going to put up, and it's all, I mean, everything I looked at, everything is informed by research and observations and logic. And so I kind of waited to post it because I didn't post it. I'm just want to talk about it because it just kind of dragged on a little bit, and I want to get your take on it too. But the premise for my argument is first off, right off the bat, we could all be equally as outraged over a mentally ill person shooting up 26 people or more, and just as we would be with a terrorist, right? I don't understand why there's some sort of false perception of some hierarchy of outrage, right? We could be outraged and shocked by both equally, if not, you know, increasingly equally, depending on, you know, the amount of casualties or whatever. It doesn't matter. So to me, the premise for this is just flawed in that, right? It almost like these people on these, you know, these pundits that try to sit here and make some weird observation about being a terrorist or mentally ill, they think they're being like super smart and like edgy. It's like, no, dude, you sound ridiculous. You sound lazy, and it doesn't make any sense. And so that bothers me. And of course, I'm of the opinion, based on like just my history with studying the subject, that they're not mutually exclusive. I'll link to some of the research that I've read in the past, that I think I've linked to it before. But especially for lone wolf actors, there's a high rate of mental illness across the board. So if you're doing something by yourself, whether it's on behalf or for some sort of political or ideological reason, if you're doing it by yourself, you're generally going to be mentally ill. Clinically, like research-wise, you will probably be mentally ill. So this idea that, like, we have to, there must be a line in the sand, and it must be either you're mentally ill or a terrorist. And usually you're brown if you're a terrorist, and you're white if you're mentally ill. That's false. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't hold up. It's lazy. Let's stop doing it. The one thing that really bothers me is the term terrorist, right? There's a universal understanding of the definition of terrorism. You can't necessarily search the internet and find, unless it's some really stupid blog like the Food Babe or something, and like they're just off the wall. But universally speaking, in academia, the definition for terrorism is pretty, there's a consensus on it. It's like, if you do not believe or go along with this definition, you're the same as a science denier in that regard. So, and that definition requires a political or ideological motive for the shooting. If absent that, it's not terrorism. What I think people are doing is they're misunderstanding terrorist as a noun and terrorized as a verb. Because I hear people go, you tell me if you're in that church, if you didn't feel terrorized. Well, yes, you felt terrorized. I get it. That's a verb. You were being terrorized, right? Terrorist is a noun. And it's also a legal standard. So, yes, you are labeled a terrorist if you're doing something for political motive reasons or ideological reasons. You cannot get around it if it's not there. If you're absent that, you are not a terrorist. A. B. If you have that and you kill 20-something odd people, it's outrageous and horrible. If you don't have that and you kill 20-something or so people, that's outrageous and horrible. Can we all agree with that?
Yes, I would agree.
I dig in this a little bit more if we want to get a little bit more into weeds. But why is there this perception that we are more vulnerable to a specific type of an act relative to another, when statistically speaking, one act might be more common than the act that we're worried about. For example, say car accidents versus a terrorist attack, right? So the premise behind that is control. So when you get into a car, you have agreed to or accepted a level of risk that includes possible death when you get into that vehicle. You've weighted that risk relative to where you need to go on whatever daily basis or whatever basis you need to go there. And you said, I still need to take this risk because I need to have this done, right? A terrorist attack, you do not accept a risk. You just, it just happens to you. Same thing with racial situations, right? You did not wake up in the morning and go, I am now black. I now accept more of a risk today when I walk out my door. No, you wake up as a black person and you're black, right? So if someone were to attack you because you're black, that is more outrageous to us, even though they happen less often than any other things like car accidents or like, you know, like pick anything, getting struck by lightning even, right? Like, well, that, I guess that would be pretty scary. But the whole, this concept of being in control or predictable is what really drives this stuff. And a lot of people don't understand it. Like, why are we so obsessed over these things that happen very rarely when there's things that happen every day that we are much more likely to have happen to us? And it's about the control. It's about being able to make that choice and that decision to assume that risk and actually go through with it. And then as opposed to something where you did not, you know, weight the risks and say, I'm willing to do this. So at some point, I guess you could say if terrorists keep attacking people, every time you walk out your door, you're now acknowledging a risk, right? So at some point, there could be a gray area with all this. But generally speaking, that's why we as a society are so worried about these very rare things that over the very common things.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. Yeah. And the thing that I think bugs me the most about the whole terrorist thing is that people are just automatically trying to conflate it with race. You know, they'll say, well, how come you're not calling this guy a terrorist? It's because he's white. And like you said, you know, terrorism itself, by definition, has to be motivated either politically or ideologically. Now, Dylann Roof, I would say, is white. And I would say that that was a terrorist act.
Yeah. And I think he was properly labeled as a terrorist actor.
Yeah. And I think that was rightly so, even though I don't know. I'm pretty sure that he wasn't like an official member of these groups, but he definitely supported and believed in the ideology of those groups. So yeah, I would label him a terrorist. He's a white guy.
So here he's a great example of that false dichotomy between terrorism and mental illness. So the research shows that if you're a lone actor, even if you sympathize with a group actor or a group, that even as a lone actor, you're, I think it was 100 times more likely to actually be mentally ill if you were to take an action, you know, that ends in death or something like that. So Dylann Roof is a very good example of a terrorist that is mentally ill. He was a lone actor, but he ascribed to a group ideology that is white supremacy, Nazi, neo-Nazism. But he didn't act as he wasn't a group actor, and he did it by himself. And there was, he has all, I mean, he's like a good case study of, by the way, everyone stop thinking that you have to be one or the other. This dude is a mentally ill terrorist. And we're seeing a lot of them, right? I mean, that's happening a lot in particular with people running people over in cars, like in the New York City, which also happened, I think, after our last podcast, right? The yes. New York City. Yeah. So there was a New York City, it was a Home Depot truck that ran over, I think, 8 people were killed, right? So that's a good example. For what we know, I mean, he claimed it was for ISIS. He sympathized with ISIS, but he didn't, as far as we know, he wasn't directed by ISIS, right? So he was 80 to 100 times more likely to be mentally ill too, right? So, and there's also some interesting stuff with San Bernardino. If you know that situation and the same research that I'm citing, and I'll link to this, also stated that a lone actor or a small group, meaning one or two people, where the radicalized one is a spouse, is more likely to influence the mentally ill one, which is usually the non-radicalized one, which is the spouse. So in San Bernardino, they had the husband and wife, and the reports were that she radicalized her husband to commit the shooting spree with her. that's a really good case study, because this research existed before that even happened. It's not like it wasn't in reaction to that, but that research found that lone wolf people that are actually acting in sympathetic to a more broader cause or radicalization of some sort of whatever cause it might be, usually a lot of times they're influenced by a spouse who is fully involved or engulfed in the actual cause itself. It's a very interesting, what I link to it is, it's a definitely a good read, and it's you could see it play out today, in the research actually showed this before a lot of the, you know, maybe more shiny object type of events that happened recently. But yeah, I mean, it's just this whole fascination over, you know, you see the memes, right, with the, you know, mentally ill and they have shades of white, right? And then terrorist shades of brown. Like, that's completely unfounded in research. It doesn't make sense. So if there is some sort of bias towards a brown person, meaning Middle Eastern, being a terrorist, it's because right now Islam has a problem, right? It's not because we're all racist. Like, it's because Islam has a problem. And it's nothing supports the memes, right? It's all just a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, and I almost feel like the people on the left really are the ones being most vocal about this, is that like, it's almost like they win. Like, we win if you know, this guy is labeled a terrorist. Like, you see, like, and he's white. Where, you know, it's like, facts be damned. We want this name put on this thing just so that we can feel better about ourselves and what we think. And yeah, it's almost like, well, you're a racist if you don't think he's a terrorist. It's like, well, no, I'm just thinking logically and incorporating the actual definition of what terrorism is. It just really was disgusting. Like, within hours of the shooting happened, they're like, oh, let's see, you know, let's see, wait, I guarantee you this guy is not going to be called a terrorist. And I said, well, at the time you didn't even know what the motives were. I mean, it was, I think probably maybe 24, 48 hours after the shooting happened that we kind of started to get an idea of what happened, and that he was a you know, a serial abuser of women, you know, kind of a sexual predator kind of a vibe too, like coming on the young girls on the internet. And then it turned out that the church that he shot up.
Child abuser too, right?
Yeah, child abuser. And the church that he shot up was his wife's congregation. And I think like his wife's grandma or ex-wife, I should say, his grandmom or something, was one of the people in the church, although I'm not sure if she was killed or not. So there was a motive behind that. It was obviously revenge. He had some kind of hatred against women or his wife or ex-wife, sorry, in general. So that's a pretty easily understandable motive.
So I would say if he had some sort of hatred against women, there could be a potential kind of like, okay, you could label him as a terrorist, right? If it was like, hey, I just don't like women. Here are all the women in my life. I hate them all. I don't like women, and I'm just going to kill women.
Well, then why not, right? Shoot up an OBGYN clinic? You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying in this case, I don't think it necessarily bears out, but I think it's worth it to make the distinction that if the only reason why he went to that church was because he knew there was going to be women there and he shot it up, that could be considered terrorism, right? He didn't necessarily, he had a ton of other reasons to be there. It wasn't necessarily because he just wanted to kill a woman, right? He could have went to an OBGYN clinic, right? He could have went to Planned Parenthood or something, right? So, that's where the distinction is, right? Like, if he said, I'm going there because I hate kids and I just want to shoot kids, that could be considered terrorism, although it's very obvious the mental illness in that, right? But this is the thing that's funny. It's like, people sit here and the distinction between, like, I would even make the argument that even if you are a group actor, even if there's six of you in a terror cell that you want to do it for Al-Qaeda, right? Like, if you're willing to kill yourself and kill people for any cause, I think you're mentally ill. That's my personal view. I know there is some people in the field of sociology and social psychology that would agree with me. The research hasn't been refined yet in that realm.
Well,
but I would probably make that argument.
That's, I don't know, to me that could be put on like regular soldiers though. Like, what about the guy that jumps on a grenade like to save his butt, like, you know? Or what about the guy that like runs into enemy fire, you know, like a US soldier?
Well, like, and to a certain degree, I think my thesis would still maintain, because I think it's like a condition, right? Like, so whether we call it moral or justified is one thing, but the ability to actually pull a trigger and take a person's life. Now, it's much easier for a soldier because of they're doing it for a just and righteous reason, right? But at the end of the day, they still have to muster up that will and belief, which might be much easier, especially if it's a kill or be killed situation, to do that, right? But I would still make the argument that even for soldiers who come back from the battlefield who had to kill people either in defense of themselves or in defense of our country would still be dealing with it, like we see them deal with it, because it's not a normal condition for us to be in, right? It's not easy or normal to cope with having to take an individual's life regardless of the circumstances.
And maybe this is a little bit of a, and I hope it doesn't come off the wrong way, but you know, maybe that's why boot camp and basic training is so geared towards breaking you down as a person and breaking you down and not seeing yourself as an individual anymore, but part as a team, and using, I mean, for lack of a better term, like propaganda to give you a sense of purpose, is that you're fighting the good fight, you're doing this. And they really do that on
It's a warrior mentality. Too. That's what they right. call it. Yeah.
And, you know, Al-Qaeda is doing essentially the same thing, just, you know, their means or their end, I guess you could argue it from either side, is maybe not coming from the same moral ground.
Yeah, it's completely like they're very similar, right, in function, but they're different in like, yeah, the moral viewpoint, like the perspective is completely different, right? But you're dead on with it. You're absolutely right. You go to boot camp, they do break you down. This is not meant to, you know, you saying this, I don't think is, you know, inflammatory, right? It's being a warrior, right? Warrior means you're able to kill someone before they kill you, or you're able to defend much better and survive, right? What does that mean in a situation where they're trying to kill you? That means you have to be better than that, right? You have to be able to defend yourself. You have to be in that mindset. That's why, like, I've deployed. I've gone to Afghanistan, I've gone to Iraq. And so the first thing they teach you, I went to a thing called Warrior School. And the first thing they teach you is the mindset. And that's what it's about, right? The mindset was, it's about awareness. It's about thinking clearly. It's all these different muscle memory things. In order for you to be able to defend yourself or have to kill someone in order to defend your own life or someone else's life. So none of that really addresses what it means mentally, right? Yes, it means to mentally prepare you to do that, but not necessarily to return you to a normal state. Like when I came back from, I think it was Iraq, I had 6 months of every time I was in a crowded place, I would get really horrible stomach pains, unexplained. Nothing like any other situation never happened, but I went to a Phillies game once. I was in the bathroom the whole game. Like, it was unexplained. The rest of the day I was home, nothing, no problem. Like, the rest of the week I was fine, right? Like, it was obvious that when I got into situations where they're, because my whole physiological system changed in settings where there was a lot of people around me from what I was trained to be and the condition I was in while I was in Iraq. It's a whole different level of awareness. And it takes over you physically and mentally. And that's what happens, right? Like, that's what we're talking about. And in many ways, that's why I think the research is kind of still out on this concept of, if you're a group actor acting on behalf of you, whether it's terrorism or whatever, are you mentally ill by default? Like, I think that's why the research is still out, because of that concept, right? Like, I think that that's an area that's still being explored, just in the context of terrorism, in the context of mass shootings, in the context of mental health for soldiers. Like, that's just an area being explored still.
No, I totally agree. And again, I hope nobody gets the idea that I was trying to equate U.S. soldiers with terrorists. I mean, certainly if you're somebody whose family got blown up by a bomb or something, some Syrian or some Afghani or something like that, you could certainly view the United States as a terrorist organization. But I wouldn't say that, you know, that's definitely not the point I was trying to make. I was just trying to say, you know, this is how people get that desire, or at least how they're able to take down that natural barrier of, you know, not wanting to do harm to another human being by, you know, instilling those ideas or ideals in you as a combatant. Listen, you know,
if this was like CNN or Fox News or something, like, you couldn't get into these nuanced concepts, right? But we're here to talk about things at a different level, right? At a more meaningful level. And that's we're talking about this in a very academic way here, even though I'm removed from academia for a little while. I know you feel compelled to think that you're equating, but you're not. You're understanding the mind, and you're understanding how people function. We're not equating these people, right? There is a such thing as good and bad, right? And we are, our soldiers, generally speaking, have been on the good side of history. As much as people want to hate us for certain things, history would tell you that the American Empire has been a good empire, a force for good, more than it's been a force for evil. And it definitely hasn't been at the soldier level that any sort of evil has been. Like, yes, people do stupid things, but when our soldiers act, they're doing it on behalf of from a moral high ground. And I don't know. Tell me, I don't think we could sit here and say which one of our foes would have potentially had a higher moral high ground than us, right? Like the Nazis?
No.
Al-Qaeda? ISIS? Like, so when our soldiers kill people, as much as it's not a typical human condition that we need to be in, like on a daily basis at home, and maybe it's hard to relate and understand, and maybe it is in some ways ruthless in a certain degree, and it's very warrior mentality, but it's really coming from a moral and justified perspective. And that in itself, it doesn't necessarily take away the mental ramifications from this, right? These soldiers are still going to come back and PTSD and have all these issues and the suicide rate and things like that. But, you know, they're still doing it from a moral perspective, but they still have to. This is something that maybe our country's just starting to figure out too, this concept that we have to deal with the mental health of this stuff because we've had such a prolonged, I mean, we've been in some sort of conflict for what? Since 2001, essentially. So, we're talking 16, 17 years we're going on of straight, like one or two theaters of war where we have people rotating in and out on a regular basis and having a high probability of being in combat. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think historically if we can equate that to something historically, and I don't know off the top of my head, but it's probably something we're not typically used to dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty strange for a nation to be in a constant state of warfare like this, you know. And even you could really argue that there really wasn't a break between the first Iraq conflict and the second one. I mean, they didn't, you know, they were constantly dropping bombs and stuff over there. They might not have had boots on the ground necessarily, you know, carrying out.
They were doing a no-fly zone. And heavy presence in Kuwait and stuff
As a country, I mean, you know, as a country, you know, this is kind of our new normal, constantly being involved in the affairs of other countries and using military force and things like that. But yeah, as a soldier, you know, if you're some 18-year-old kid going to basic, you know, because maybe you wanted to serve your country, maybe you just were from the middle of nowhere, Alabama, and there just wasn't anything there for you. So you're like, hey, you know, this is the only way I'm going to make a living. I'm going to join the army. Whatever your reasons are, you know, for joining, the things that you have to do when you sign up, I mean, are the same, you know.
Just to close it out, like, I think it's a little ridiculous. I think we need to stop politicizing things immediately. I mean, I guess a lot of people are saying that, so that's not necessarily the most amazing insight on this. But terrorists are mentally ill. We could be equally as outraged when those individuals kill people. Like, there's no need to separate them. Let's understand that if you kill someone because of terrorism, it's a good chance you're mentally ill. If you just kill someone because you're mentally ill, it's a horrible thing, right? So, you know, and obviously there's the gun control stuff, but we won't get into that. But let's touch on the Harvey Weinstein situation, that fallout. Like, since our last podcast, it has blown up considerably. I think we're going on 35 plus celebrities that have been implicated, some heavy hitters in that. I mean, Kevin Spacey's most recent one, what's it? Lewis. What's it, Lewis? I was going to say Lois and Clark. What's his name? Lewis C.K. I'm sorry. Lewis and Clark. But I mean, Ben Affleck, but I think that was, we knew about Ben Affleck when our last podcast, but there's like, I'm just scrolling through the list and it's just, it's crazy. Like the faces are more familiar than some of the names too. Cause some of the, they aren't all A-listers. Like Steven Seagal's in there. I don't know if
he's Steven Seagal.
He's an A-list name with B-list movies.
Yeah, well, he's on there. I mean, for something, yes, you can sexually harass somebody verbally, but I mean, saying something to somebody and doing something to somebody, to me, are completely different levels of severity. If you're forcing yourself on somebody or forcing somebody to watch you do something or putting somebody in a physical situation, that's something. If you make a phone call to somebody and say, hey, why don't you sit in my face? You know?
Yeah. That's what we'll get into too with the moral panic of all this. But Jeffrey Tambor, did I say that correctly? The Transparent star. He's on that list. He's on the list. Dustin Hoffman's on there. Geez. I mean, it's just Jeremy Piven.
Yeah, you know what though? I've heard stories about him being a creep for years now. I mean, not necessarily abusing, just that he's an asshole. Like he's very.
Oh, Andy Dick's on there. I don't think we should be surprised.
Andy Dick has a long history.
I mean, I think he would probably freely admit to that and still have a very good career.
Yeah.
Like Kevin Spacey's probably the highest profile, but the most probably because of House of Cards, like the most shocking. I think the statistic, I think there's 11 shows or movies, either ongoing shows or upcoming movies that are affected by this. Louis C.K.'s movie was completely just canceled. Like they're not even going to show it. Like it's produced, it's ready to go. They're not even going to show it. It just goes on and on. Like,
you know,
and a lot of people think this is female related. A lot of this has to do with like child pedophilia and like Corey Haim and those, that crew and those old school actors and stuff like that. And it's like, it's pretty deep. But we need to be cautious.
Yeah. I mean, and this is something like, it's so strange because like that Louis C.K. story about him masturbating in front of women came out maybe a year or two ago and like nothing really came of it. But now Harvey Weinstein gets, you know, brought out to light by these people. And now it's like all these stories that people already knew about are now coming out and they're like, crucify him, crucify him. It's like, well, you heard about this a couple of years ago. Why wasn't it so outrageous back then? And now all of a sudden it's like, you got to hang this guy. And believe me, I'm not sticking up for these people. Believe me, in the last podcast, when we talked about this, I had mentioned that all forms of sexual abuse or sexual assault are wrong, especially when it's against, you know, the most defenseless part of the population, which are like children. And, you know, so that's terrible. But, you know, some of these things, you know, it's just, they knew about it. They knew that it was going on. Charlie Sheen was like arrested for like locking a hooker, like in a closet and all this other stuff. And then he became super famous after that. Tiger Blood. Yeah. Winning. Cause, oh great. Look at this guy. He's a coke addict with AIDS. Oh, isn't he a fucking role model? You know,
this kind of reminds me of my Facebook post that like, I mean, not many of our Facebook posts really get much attention. However, I was just like so fired up with that post. It just, to me, it's astonishing that people can pay money to have you be silent in this situation. Like, where, like, is that not like, is that a, like, extortion? Like, I don't, like, that should not be illegal. That should not be legal, right? The idea that you could be approached by someone and say, you sexually assaulted, raped, or whatever me, I'm going to sue you civilly, pay me, you get paid, and you don't say a word.
Well, that's
right. Yeah. And then 15, 20, 30 people are now victims after you. So this is, I don't know if this is going to come off as extremely insensitive or not, but once you take money for your silence, I look at you as a co-conspirator.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Does it,
like, what makes you any different than me going outside right now, shooting someone in the head? The one person that saw me do it, I said, here's $1,000. Don't say a word. They never say a word. That murder goes unsolved for the rest of their life. Like, in that scenario, they would both be charged as a co-conspirator and an actual murderer if they were caught. So what makes this any different?
Because we live in a world, I think lawyers and people obviously with money have way too much power in these sorts of issues. Essentially, it's like, you know, I guess before it gets brought to the attention of the state, like if because the state, like the people are who file charges against these people. So if it never reaches that level and they enter into a legal agreement that I'm going to take X amount of dollars, and because it's something that's happening against them, it's not like, you know, you witnessed me sexually assault a child, so we're going to have legal documents saying that you can't mention that I sexually assaulted a child. I think that's a different case than like if it's the person themselves saying you sexually assaulted me. In lieu of me going after you in court, I'll settle for, you know, the harm, right, or the injury caused by this act, you know, and we'll put some kind of a monetary figure on it. So, I mean, it happens with like businesses and stuff all the time. It's like, you know, yeah, our medicine caused you to go blind, rather than have this brought to light in the court system and go through this trial where we could get convicted of a crime. How about we just give you, you know, financial remuneration? I think is the word.
Sounds good to me. Dude, I'm the last one you want to ask and, to pronounce words.
You know, that will, you know, settle the matter, you know, so it doesn't have to go to court, sort of a thing. So, yeah, I don't think you could do that if a crime is committed against somebody else. But if it's a crime committed against you and you choose not to bring charges and it's not brought to the police or the state's attention, then you can do it, I guess, theoretically.
Think about this with domestic violence, right? There was a time, and I don't know if it's all states now, but some states now have changed their domestic violence requirements. It used to be that if someone was called, like the police were called for a domestic violence situation, or someone called the police because they heard something happening, if the person who is perceived to be the victim says, I don't want to press charges, the police just leave, right? So now there are certain situations in many states where the police can't just leave. They actually have to investigate it as a violent act that took place, regardless of whether the victim wants to press charges. It's actually looked at as a crime against the, I guess,
people, the state, yeah,
community, the people, yeah, because these situations more frequently than not turn into much worse situations, or they end up victimizing other people, or the original victim ends up being killed or murdered or severely injured.
And I think that is pretty much nationwide now. Like, if you go to a domestic abuse situation, you can't, like, the person can't say, oh, you know what, I have a black eye, but he didn't mean it. Now the police just take matters into their hands, because now it's not a matter between two, I guess, a defendant and a plaintiff. It's like the state and the plaintiff, like the offender.
So what we have here now is a situation where we have to, I think we need to adjust how we approach these things, right? Now, notwithstanding false accusations and stuff like that, we could talk about that in a minute, or, you know, raising the bar, lowering the bar, and what is sexual crimes or whatever. But it is my opinion that I think that when it comes to, especially with children, if it's associated with children, we should make all lawyers, if you are going to be passed the bar exam, you need to be a mandatory reporter, regardless.
Well, I think they are.
No, they're not. They're not right now.
Lawyers aren't
mandatory. So only lawyers that work in specific areas of law are, and it depends on who they are actually working for too. So no, lawyers are not mandatory reporters. So and likewise, judges aren't either, by the way. So I think we need to make lawyers and judges mandatory reporters. And we also need to take this a step further. If you are a lawyer or a judge in a civil case that has to do with a rape or legitimate accusation of a legitimate criminal act, that I think you need to either... It needs to be concurrently filed with the police in order to make that civil suit like functional. Like, it needs to be concurrent, right? Like, or one needs to happen before the other or something like that. Like, so if I'm a judge in a civil court and someone presents to me an accusation that the defendant has broken a law, then that law if you're going to be able to sue in civil court, then you need to prosecute in criminal court. Otherwise, you can't bring up the criminal charges in civil court.
So you're making it essentially a matter of like recording it, just not being a matter of like public record. So like I couldn't say, all right, this guy had a sexual assault thing, but it was settled out of court as like a regular Joe. I can't look it up online, but if something happens in the future, the police would say, have that on file.
I would take that as the minimum. I would be cool with that. Like at least there's a record, right, for the police to have access to. But I would say if you're going to accuse someone in civil court of a criminal crime, there needs to be a criminal filing. Like there needs to be criminal charges placed. Like that's the bottom line.
And like you said, I mean, I'm not against it, but when you have things where it's a he said, she said, and it's like, well, I'm a woman. Look at the age we live in. They're going to believe me. You know, I want $200,000 or I'm going to tell them that you raped me. Like I saved, you know, the semen from your condom and I, you know, bruised myself up. And I mean, I'm sure that is something that happens 0.00001% of the time. I'm not saying it happens all the time, but it can happen. So now you're like putting something where it could have been a case where this person didn't want to get their name dragged through the mud. And they said, you know what? I have the financial means to take care of this. I don't want to go through a long, drawn-out court battle, destroy my reputation, even though I know I'm innocent. Hey, here's $500,000. Just fuck you kind of money. You know what I mean?
It kills me that there is a function in our legal system, whether it be civil or criminal, that allows someone to either legitimately be victimized by a chargeable offense, whether it be rape or something else, but their silence be bought and them never be brought to justice. That in itself, there's got to be a way to make sure that that doesn't continue to happen.
Yeah. And I think like everybody has a duty to protect other people. But now it's almost like even just the standards of like what is consensual sex is getting so extreme. It's like I'm reading now that they're teaching kids like in high school or like college, they're like, you have to ask consent like every like 10 minutes in the act.
Every step of the way.
So it's like, yeah. Is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? And like anybody who's had sex before pretty much knows that's not what happens.
no.
And if it did, it's kind of like a mood killer. I think any person that's in that moment kind of gets a feeling like, I don't really feel like she's into this. You know, but maybe that's what makes creeps creeps. They just don't have
that
radar
that
goes off. They're like, fucking, I'm going to get my nut, you know, like,
I mean, we do have to be careful of that. Right. I mean, there is the Duke lacrosse team. I mean, there's some really high profile cases of late where these things were completely fabricated and ruined people's lives. Right. So it's not bullshit to say that people use this to their advantage or make shit up. Like it happens more often than we would probably think. It's definitely not a high percent. I think the statistic is somewhere between 6% to 35% of sexual crime accusations are either falsified or not actually sexual crimes. So that's a very large range, right? So but let's take this.
6 to 35.
Yeah, it's very large, which makes you, that's your first cue that the research is still happening or needs to be happen. But let's take the low end. 6% is still, that's still 6% of people that are being falsely accused of something. And our criminal system, our justice system in our country was set up to value letting a criminal go rather than putting an innocent person in jail. I know that might sound crazy when you really look at our system, but relative to other criminal systems in the world, the way our founders set things up, they crafted the Constitution and they used a method of law that valued having a criminal go free before an innocent person is wrongly prosecuted. So, you know, we have to be careful of how we approach this. There are, you know, there's it's such a tough thing because it's not popular. It's not, I mean, you could maybe say moral to question a victim. I mean, but if you're a victim or a perceived victim, what gives you some sort of authority, right? You need to take it out on its merits and you need to look at it objectively. You can't just say this person's a victim. I'm going to weight what just the words that come out of their mouth higher than say a physical evidence because of that, right? You can't do that type of stuff. You need to look at things in an objective viewpoint. And it's tough, man, because especially when you have something like the moral panic we see with the Harvey Weinstein and the Hollywood situation, things kind of spiral out of control, and we need to be careful because this is something that's studied in sociology. This is not necessarily a new phenomenon. In the 1980s and 1990s, there was the child care, satanic, sexual abuse thing, the moral panic that went on. And it was like for me and for you and for if Anthony was here and for a lot of people our age, we probably vaguely remember this, if at all remember it. But it was well documented. It's studied in academia. It was literally like there's one or two events that happened, and it's very similar to the Weinstein in Hollywood, and it turned into this almost witch hunt, and it became this self-fulfilling prophecy and a vicious cycle, if you will. And to this day in academia, they study the cases of people who were still in jail because of that likely didn't do anything wrong. Because it just became this moral entrepreneurs in the mass media essentially took it over and started inflating things. And like, especially when you're talking about children, we talked about this before the cast, they're so easily influenced when you're asking them questions and things like that. You could lead the witness very easily. And we might be seeing this with the Harvey Weinstein thing. We need to be very, very careful of this because, like, people are losing careers. Shows are being canceled. Movies are being canceled. As much as I want to sit back and go, ha, 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 Hollywood, this is what you get. You're a bunch of assholes. I, just like the First Amendment argument, I can't sit here and just let this happen without a critical eye on it because this could turn around for anyone. Just like for the person who's shouting down the conservative at a university and not giving that conservative their free speech right to sit there and talk, they shouldn't be shouting that person down because they could be the one being shouted down a month later, right? And same thing here. I don't want to sit back and just go, this is Hollywood, ha, 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 you're getting what you deserve. And then suddenly it's going to come back on people like me who have my opinion. Like it gets so blown out of proportion, I need to make sure I'm getting the right fair shot here, right? Like that type of stuff. It's and my one post I did where I was making fun of the one actor, I forget his name. I thought it was interesting because he tweeted about how he wanted his due process rights. And to me, it was just this laughing thing. Like, you created this. You're Hollywood. You created this social environment where due process doesn't exist and doesn't matter. You are part of this realm that we're all acting in. And now you suddenly want your 14th Amendment rights. Like, yeah, you'll get it in with your local police. You'll get it with your courthouse. You're not going to get it on Twitter. You're not going to get it on Facebook. You're not going to get it on the blogosphere and the Huffington Post and the Fox News. You're not going to get it because you helped create it. So there's a part of me that wants to just say that and reiterate that to them. But, you know, we do have to be careful where this all might go in terms of like a witch hunt.
Yeah, it's very much now a culture where you're guilty until proven innocent, even though it's supposed to be the opposite of that. Because, I mean, and just a silly example, you go on, say, 6ABC, every once in a while, they'll just have like 12 pictures of 12 dudes. These guys all caught in a prostitution sting. They weren't convicted of a crime. They were just arrested for a crime. So, I mean, on the off chance that they are innocent, now their face is out there as this person frequents prostitutes. This person is a scumbag, even though they've never been convicted.
It's never coming back. It's never going away. It's there. It's done.
Yeah. Good luck getting a job. Good luck going to Thanksgiving dinner, looking your family in the face. I don't see how that can be really legal. And then in the age of social media, it's not like back when it would be like maybe in the newspaper. It's like, all right, well, you know, what are the chances of being seen? Now it's like everybody's on Facebook. Everybody shares and all these things. And hey, that's Bob Jones. I went to high school with him. And then they're posting it on their high school's Facebook page. Look, Bob Jones just got locked up for, you know, going to a prostitute. He got busted in his sting operation. Never convicted of a crime, but that dude's life is pretty much ruined now. You know, and maybe he's found innocent, you know, who knows?
You Google his name and forever those things are now attached to it, you know? And it's, you know, it's a slippery slope. It could be bad. You know, this is probably going to get worse. You're going to see, I don't know. I don't know what, how this ends, but hopefully the real victims in all this get justice. I hope something changes when it comes to how we handle these things. Like, I think we need to, I do think this is a good area where we need to really like say to ourselves, like is civil court really like that buying the silence, is that really something we want to be in our society? Right. Like, I just think there needs to be some, you know, rethinking of some mechanisms that have enabled this. And I also think that we need to really explore why, let's say all these people who are coming out and accusing people, let's say a high rate of them are legit and they really had sex crimes against them. We need to understand why they took so long to come out, because the reality of it is, you know, that first person who decided not to say anything could have stopped a lot of other people from being victimized. And I don't, that's not meant to shame them per se, especially if they didn't get paid to be quiet. I don't want to shame them. But I do want to understand why. Right. And I want to try to help be a part of the solution of enabling them to come out. And so it doesn't happen again and again and again. And if you're paid for it, you don't have my sympathy. Sorry. I mean, I just can't, I'm not going to give you my sympathy because you got your payday and 15 other people were raped. I mean, you're just not going to have my sympathy from that. Never, ever in a million years have my sympathy.
And even in some of these cases, I mean, these people, aside from the settlement or whatever they got out of the court, they ended up benefiting career-wise from what happened to them or what they did. So it's like, you know, you can't take the benefit and then come out and speak out against the bad. Yeah. It's just very hypocritical.
And like, there is that power dynamic. I get it. But at some point you need to reassess, like Ashley Judd, right? Like, she did not continue to have to keep that a secret. She was successful and she was still keeping it a secret. So that excuse was out the window, right? So anyway, it is what it is. I just hope we kind of really approach this like in an objective way and we get to a place where we're doing this fairly and we're doing it in a constructive way so it doesn't continue to happen. And there is a part of me that's like, I love the hypocrisy that is Hollywood. So that's entertaining. I don't want to say it's entertaining that this is happening and I'm entertained by it, but the hypocrisy itself is entertaining.
Yeah. Well, like I said in that post on our page, you know, it's like the sweet taste of irony. These people that wanted to tell us how to think, how to act, what car to drive, you know, what animals to save, you know, what kind of food to eat, have been like raping each other and covering up rapes for decades, you know?
Decades, yeah. It's crazy. We're on 54 minutes or so here, by the way.
Whoa, Melissa's not going to be
happy.
Time flies.
I think she'll be all right. I don't know. She might not even listen anymore. Melissa, if you listen, like, just comment hi on a post somewhere. Anyway. We're on 55 minutes or so. These things fly by. I did a lot of talking this episode. I feel kind of bad. I'm sorry. These are two things that I've thought about a lot over the past couple weeks. And I just kind of wanted to get the whole like terrorist and mentally ill thing really bugged the shit out of me because I thought it was just so fucking lazy.
Yeah.
It just kills me.
And we did touch on this in a podcast a few months back when that, I believe it was a Latino ex-soldier went in and shot someplace.
The airport in Florida.
Yeah. That's right, the Florida airport.
Yeah.
Kind of got into this baby board, but it's something that keeps rearing its head.
Keeps coming up. It's like, show some intellectual depth and not say, oh, if he's brown, he's going to be labeled a terrorist. Because we all know the definition of terrorism. It's well-defined. Google it. And if those conditions are met, you have a terrorist.
And there was a brown person that was not labeled a terrorist.
Yes, there's been plenty of brown people who have been labeled terrorists. Timothy McVeigh is a very famous one of them. Like, and Dylan Roof. And I mean, they go on, I mean, you could probably list a bunch, right? So it is what it is. We're living in a world of craziness. Nutso people. Anyway, Rich, you know you're going to probably have the last word here in 14 seconds, so I hope you're able to come up with one.
Yes.
Okay, so in 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Remuneration. Money paid for work or a service. I was correct. Remuneration.